This is Selection 76, comprehensive local, state, and national election returns and analysis. Portions of the production funding for this evening's programming have been paid for by the Home News Publishing Company and Johnson & Johnson Incorporated. Coming up next on Selection 76, state and national coverage on the New Jersey Election Network, a production of WRSU News. You are listening to 88.7 WRSU FM in New Brunswick.
Good morning, I'm Stuart Knorr here with Steve Murphy and the rest of the WRSU Election Night, Now Election Morning news team. Well, Jimmy Carter's the President of the United States, President-elect, according to all three major networks and the news services, UPI, Reuters, and the Associated Press. The latest figures we have for the presidency are 84% of the vote in. President Ford, now a lame duck president, 48% of the vote to Jimmy Carter's 51. I must point out that throughout the night, that has been a steady percentage. Although the numbers have grown larger, Carter has been ahead of Ford 51-48 for almost all the night. Right now, the numbers are 34,628,691 for Carter, 32,568,521 for Ford. That is about a 2 million vote difference, popular vote, out of over 66 million votes. So again, if the country ever decides or an amendment is ever passed to eliminate the Electoral College, it will make a tremendous difference in the way our presidents are elected, because we have Jimmy Carter, along with all the other major news sources, winning this year's election by quite a bit of a margin as far as the electoral vote is concerned. However, the popular vote, very close. Ford has taken 23 states. That's, of course, almost half the country with 183 electoral votes, and is leading in five with 64 more. However, Carter has won 23, the same amount, with 272 electoral votes, and is leading in one with 45 more. So it doesn't appear to us right now that Ford can catch Carter, although we're told that the president still believes he can do so. But again, Jimmy Carter, two over the limit, needed to become the next president of the United States. We're expecting a speech momentarily, and we just pointed out a few moments ago that Virginia was the only southern state not to go to Carter in a year when the whole South is colored in for Carter. Steve Murphy is from Virginia. Steve, you were there not too long ago. What's the sentiment in Virginia toward Carter? Is there negative sentiment? Was it close? Why do you think Virginia didn't go for a man who's just from a state not too far away in the South?
Well, Stu, I think the whole thing can be attributed to the key of Jimmy Carter's campaign. It's what's hurt him, and perhaps it's what has helped him so often. That is, being accused of being all things to all people. The Virginians, as I feel, and of course this is all instinctive, never were able to ascertain whether or not Jimmy Carter was a conservative or a liberal. And I think in the final analysis, they felt as though he were a liberal. In the Republican National Convention, Mills Godwin, who is the present governor of the state of Virginia, who incidentally used to be a Democrat and switched over, like the famous John Connally, and is now the governor of the state, let people know that one of the things that Virginians were serious about was gun control and abortion, things that the Republican platform was embracing during the last months of the campaign. And also, I think Virginia was one of those indecisive states, as the state of New Jersey was. Another factor that you can't rule out is that Virginia, being a high suburban community, especially in the outskirts of the cities like Richmond, and most especially on the outskirts of Washington, D.C., can align itself with the same sort of philosophies of the people in the state of New Jersey, and I think could perhaps be predicted to have gone the same way as the people here. Ford ran well here in New Jersey in the suburban communities of Bergen, Morris, Monmouth, and Essex counties to offset Carter's showing in center city areas of the state. Of course, Carter is very popular with the urbanites. Assembly Minority Leader Thomas Kane of Livingston headed the Ford campaign in New Jersey, and he says that the suburban vote provided Ford with that margin of victory. It was the sixth time in the last eight elections that a GOP White House candidate had carried New Jersey. So I think that New Jersey, Virginia, perhaps in many ways carrying the same kind of philosophies, as I said before, especially in platform, not necessarily with leadership or even with the Virginians aligning themselves with a fellow Southerner. It was that platform that made the difference.
Steve, I'm told that all the networks are now on special standby, waiting for President-elect Carter to make his victory speech. I think we can expect it any minute right now. Jimmy Carter, again, the President of the United States, 272 electoral votes. He has the entire Southeast, a lot of the Northeast, as well as Minnesota, and the President, President Ford, the entire West. We're not sure about California, Oregon, or Montana yet. Hawaii has gone to Carter. Alaska, we don't know about it. It'll take too long. I don't expect to have that before we go off. We're waiting right now for Jimmy Carter to make his victory. And that bulletin sounder should signal to us that Jimmy Carter is getting ready to come down and make his victory speech. Don Parisi is in Atlanta looking at the Carter campaign from down there. We're going to be hearing the speech courtesy of WNWS in New York, and we appreciate them for that privilege. And we're just waiting right now for the governor to come down. He's on his way. Now President-elect Carter getting ready to make his victory speech to accept the presidency of the United States, which he has worked so long and so hard to get. 22 months on the campaign trail, almost 2 years. He's traveled 500,000 miles. But still, we're still waiting for the speech, which should come momentarily now from President-elect Carter, and here it is now.
He has with him David, Amy, and Rosalind.
Rosalind Carter and Amy with him. He's shaking hands with all the members of the family now, smiling, grinning. They all are returning the affectionate hug to him. And he looks as if he's saying, boy, we did it tonight. We've heard the chant all night. We want Carter. Now the crowd has him. And now here is Governor, our President-elect, Jimmy Carter.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody. Let me say just a word. Let me say just a word to you. This tremendous crowd at 4 o'clock in the morning represents hundreds of millions of American people who are now ready to see our nation unified, and I want to congratulate the toughest and most formidable opponent that anyone could possibly have, President Gerald Ford. As I've said many times throughout this nation, he's a good and decent man, and no one could have a campaign that had to be so thoroughly organized, hard-fought, and which has marshaled so much cooperation from hundreds of thousands of people around this country who've had confidence in me. And I pray that I can live up to your confidence and never disappoint you. We have a great nation, as you know. And sometimes in the past, we've been disappointed at our own government. But I think it's time to tap the tremendous strength and vitality and idealism and hope and patriotism and a sense of brotherhood and sisterhood in this country to unify our nation, to make it great once again. It's not going to be easy for any of us. I don't claim to know all the answers, but I have said many times in my campaign around all 50 states that I'm not afraid to take on the responsibilities of President of the United States because my strength and my courage and my advice and my counsel and my criticism comes from you. And if I can tap the greatness that's in you and in the American people, we can make our nation's government great and a source of pride once again.
Yes.
Are you proud of our nation? Do you think we can help to unify it and bring it back together? Do you think we can put our people back to work? So do I. And I'll do the best I can. I'll do the best I can during this transition period from now until next January to continue to learn how to be a good president. And I've learned in the last 22 months, I believe, as well as any human being could have learned, what our people are, what we have been in the past, and what we can be. And I believe that this next 4 years, that we will have a sense of purpose, a sense that the government belongs to us, a sense that we participated in this campaign. And now I welcome all of those in the United States, whether they, like you, supported me or supported Mr. Ford or someone else. It's time for us to get together, to correct our mistakes, to answer difficult questions, and to make our nation great. I want to thank all of you. I love everybody here. You've been great to me. Thank you very much.
President-elect Jimmy Carter now going back over to bring members of his family out to the front of the platform to receive the accolades. Let's go now to the White House and Russ Ward.
We thank WNWS of New York for permission to use that feed. Again, President-elect Jimmy Carter, very emotional, very happy. Kind of tired, I guess, Steve, but it's been a long way for him, and he's finally made it.
Well, fortunately, he didn't have laryngitis, as we heard the president did, and he was able to pull off a pretty good speech. It was emotional, but he also seemed to have pretty good control, which has been perhaps one of Jimmy Carter's most attractive characteristics.
It certainly has been. I want to start. We're waiting for Don Parisi to call up for a final wrapper from Atlanta. In the meantime, we want to begin to thank some of the many people who made Selection 76 possible this year. From Ford State Headquarters, Bill Hodder and Gay Rosenthal. From Carter State Headquarters, Amy Feldman and Evan Kuttner. The Pro Casino Gambling, Joan Kiesling and Ira Kaplan with an excellent report. From Harrison Williams Headquarters, Jay Duell and Neil Roberts. The headquarters of David Norcross, Steve Inslee was there with Mary Petrovsky. At the Middlesex Democrats, Tom Dwyer and Janet Fabro. At the Middlesex Republicans, Gina Geslowitz and Stu Brown. At Middlesex County, Gary Thompson and Mike Lothan. At Somerset County, Pete Fricke and Barbara Lerner.
Stu, our national and state writers and researchers were Sue Nocitra, Roxanne Narr, Helen Tenenbaum, Mark Walker, and Barry Lemberski. Our local writers and researchers were Marie Dandola, Steve Green, Jody Lewis, Lynn Sharp, Paul Spahala, Janet Bamford. The headlines were handled by Maureen Kwop. Our UPI man was Greg Tabakin. Our copy editor was Pat Garrison. Our network monitors were Allison Rose, Liz Brown, Jeannie Paolella, Elaine Parente. And we took feeds from Bill Lair, Ted Cohen, Bill Foley of WTBS in Cambridge, Mass., Ted Huff, Dave Carey, Doug Kerchief of WQAQ in New Haven, Lou Barbado of WRTI in Philadelphia. Our feeds were coordinated by Dave Yuckman and Duke Marcos, with technical assistance by Rich Argentieri, and to you, Stu Narr.
And thank you, too, Steve Murphy. I want to go through our list of technicians. Steve Gafrida, our station manager, Hal Lynch, Steve Tamicki, Scott Zeigen, Steve Boy, Dan Schleck, Fred Potter, Bob Frisch, Linda Broido, and Jeff Broido, Mark Robinson, our border engineers, a great job over the past over 9 hours, to Mitch Heimwitz and Bob Lazarchik, who's both still hanging in there with me, our political analyst, Dr. Ross Baker, who did a tremendous job for us, Atlanta Remote, and we'll be thanking him before the morning is over, Don Parisi with Steve Ferrero, in Washington, Nancy Fox, Paul Marinaccio, and Nancy Breslin, Piscataway Remote, Bill Berliner, and in Union, Linda Malazzi, and of course, Steve Murphy, my fellow anchorman. I can't thank you enough. It was a pleasure. Our assistant production coordinator was Dave Levine, and without Dave, we really have a hard time putting anything like this together. He's a great help and inspiration to us all. And, of course, also, my tremendous thanks on behalf of all of us to Mike Blishak, election night coordinator for the past 3 years, a tremendous job. He's with me all the time. Sends me home to sleep while he stays up all night at WRSU. Mike, I can't say enough thanks.
And who has been working on this campaign since February.
Stu, Steve, just a brief thing. You went through all the names, and it's not just one person. It's not just me. It is all these people that have contributed the time and the effort, and I think put in the most complete and comprehensive job any radio station could have done with the people we have to work with. They're great people. It's been a great privilege for me to work with them, and I just wanted to thank everybody and make sure that we didn't miss anybody. Stu.
Thanks, Mike. We're still waiting for Don Parisi on the line. I don't know if he's on the line right now. Is that Don right now, or are we still waiting for him? Well, we're still waiting. We have a new president, President-elect Jimmy Carter, James Earl Carter of Georgia, peanut farmer who's not going to have too much time for shelling peanuts in the next few years. However, hopefully he'll have time to do a lot of other things than he's been waiting to do in Washington. Jimmy Carter will have a strong Democratic majority to work with in Congress. In 33 Senate races, were won by Democrats, 9 by Republicans, and 1 by an independent. Only one Senate race, the tight battle in California between incumbent Democrat John Toney and the GOP's Esai Hayakawa, the famous semanticist, is undecided. The new Senate will have at least a 62-36 Democratic edge, a net gain of 1 for the Democrats. If Toney wins, the margin will go up to 63-36 with one independent. In the House, at least 244 Democrats were elected, while 111 Republicans won. Steve?
Stu, there's some late news for people from the state of New Jersey, some very interesting races, the ones I think that the people have been keeping their eye on the most from the Garden State. New Jersey Republicans have picked up a congressional seat at the expense of Congressman Harry Helstowski, who campaigned for re-election under the shadow of federal indictment. All other incumbents were re-elected. Helstowski's seat will be taken by Republican Harold Cappy Hollenbeck, a former state legislator from East Rutherford. Seeking his seventh term, Helstowski was accused during the campaign of taking bribes in exchange for sponsoring citizenship legislation for illegal aliens. In another closely watched race, Assembly Speaker Joseph LeFante felt the wrath of anti-income tax voters as he struggled to defeat Republican Anthony Campeny. The race was for the seat in the normally Democratic safe 14th District in Hudson County, vacated by the retiring Dominique V. Daniels. Campeny made a race out of it because LeFante was instrumental in getting the legislature to pass the new tax. Helstowski was defeated by 18,000 votes and Campeny by 5,600 with all precincts counted. Another surprising race was in the 13th District, where Democrat Helen Maynor was tied in the early counting before she defeated Republican William Schluter. The Garden State's new congressional delegation in the new Congress will be made up of 11 Democrats and 4 Republicans. That's a net gain of 1 for the GOP. All the other 12 incumbents seeking re-election in New Jersey won, including freshman Andrew McGuire, William Hughes, and James Florio.
Well, Steve, while we have a little time and we're waiting for Don Parisi, I just want to mention some things that have happened in New Jersey. New Jersey voters have approved $225 million in bond issues for housing, sewer projects, and upgrading state institutions. Last year, state voters rejected $1 billion in bond issues, but yesterday, the voters approved a more modest version scaled down by the Commission on Capital Planning. With more than 65% of the vote counted, the bond issues won with margins of 50,000 to 350,000 votes. The Clean Water and Sewage Project bond issue received the most support. And as you remember, last year, the Green Acres bond issue was one of the few to win support, so New Jersey is going in the road to improve the environment, which we can only thank the people for. Voters also overwhelmingly approved the referendum on dedicating income tax revenues to provide property tax relief, which would be welcome to everyone since we have to pay it anyway. And the vote was 908,000 for, 385,000 against. One question which went down to defeat was supported by shore resorts and would have allowed an increase in the maximum prizes in amusement games. That vote was 654,000 and 463,000 for. A third question extended homestead exemptions to the spouses of a deceased senior citizen and the handicapped, and it was also approved by a wide margin.
Well, Stu, we've got another bit of news about Henry Helstowski, that sixth-term congressman from the 9th Congressional District of New Jersey, who had been defeated by his Republican challenger, Harold Hollenbeck. Helstowski had this to say about his defeat.
I'm just amazed that, you know, the kind and the level of things that have occurred, and I'm not a bit sorry about it. And I'm thankful for all of you that are here. I'm thankful for those people that assisted. And I'm thankful for the people on my staff who have done a good job for my constituents. And it's not the kind of thing that, you know, you can't express yourself and be very, very happy about it. I'm just like a little numbed by it more than anything else. But I think there are a lot of things that have to be rectified in this country. There are people that, you know, just are willing to take things for granted and say that's the way things are because I read it in the newspapers. And then there are other people that are willing to stand up to principle and fight for what's right. I always thought I was one of those people, and I told many of you, and I've seen you in this campaign, that my conscience is clear about things. That's probably one of the factors in the indictment. And then I think it relates to the whole tax situation in New Jersey. Unfortunately, it reflected itself to a degree, not entirely, but to a degree anyway. And we're not we're not ready to roll over and die by any means. It's just one election that didn't go our way.
That was Congressman Henry Helstosky commenting on his loss this evening. Harold Hollenbeck is that new congressman for the 9th Congressional District. He's a 37-year-old Republican and former state senator. Hollenbeck had this to say about his victory.
I said all along that the indictment had to be underlying in people's minds. And of course, they then would take it into account when they voted. But you've got to look at the voter turnout this year in the district. You've got to look at where they came from and the towns that they came out in. We returned a lot of Republicans to the Republican column that hadn't been there since the Watergate fiasco. And a lot of independents came over as well.
That was new Representative Hollenbeck, who will be taking over Henry Helstosky's seat as soon as he is inaugurated, whenever that is. I guess that's in January. I want to go over now the final numbers we have from this year's presidential election. Of course, the vote is not completely counted. This is 84% of the vote. Throughout the night, we've been reporting that President-elect Carter had 51 to President Ford's 48%. Well, that looks like it might be the final numbers. It might change a little bit now, but they're both very close as far as the popular vote is concerned. Jimmy Carter, 34.5 million. President Ford, 32.5 million. Again, the Electoral College making the big difference here, because without the Electoral College, it would be a very, very close race. Ford won 23 states, so did Carter. Ford's 23 gave him 183 electoral votes, and he was leading in five states with 64 more. Carter, his 23 gave him what he needed to win, 272-2 over. He's leading in one state, California, with 45 votes. Electoral votes. We still haven't gotten a word what's going to happen in California. We've gotten Hawaii before California for some reason here. So even though the polls have only been closed for 5.5 hours in California, we're still waiting from a report there to see who's going to take the state. Steve?
Of course, President Ford had carried the Garden State. He had apparently ridden the crest of an anti-income tax backlash and dissension among Democrats to defeat Jimmy Carter in this battle for New Jersey's 17 electoral votes. With 94% of the state's election districts counted early today, Ford had 1,368,000 votes to Carter's 1,309,000. Independents Eugene McCarthy and Lester Maddox trailed far, far, far behind. Ford ran well enough in suburban communities in Bergen, Morris, Monmouth, and Essex counties to offset Carter's showing in center city areas of the state. Assembly Minority Leader Thomas Kane of Livingston headed the Ford campaign in New Jersey, and he says the suburban vote provided Ford with that margin of victory. This, by the way, was the sixth time in the last eight elections that a Republican White House candidate had carried this state of New Jersey. Leaders of the Carter campaign in New Jersey were quick to point at voter dissatisfaction with New Jersey's recently enacted income tax, to which Ford alluded both times when he campaigned in the state. Top campaign lieutenants of the former Georgia governor were also quick to place part of the blame for Carter's loss in New Jersey on the shoulders of the state Democratic chairman, James Dugan of Bayonne. As Carter deputy campaign director Robert Hoffman put it, quote, basically, with his help, we could have won. Ironically, Carter had appointed an out-of-stater to head his New Jersey campaign in an effort to avoid the intra-part differences that has divided the state party. Dugan supported Hubert Humphrey and California Governor Edmund Brown in the June primary, while Governor Burns supported Carter. Hoffman also blames Carter's loss in New Jersey on voter discontent with the state's income tax, which was approved last summer by the Democratic-controlled legislature and supported strongly by Byrne. Well, it's happened. We have a new president of the United States. Ironically, as you said before, Stu, it was the state of Hawaii and then the state of Mississippi with their seven electoral votes, giving Carter 272, which put him over the top. It was not the state of Illinois, which just came in a little while ago, 26 electoral votes going to President Ford, outgoing President Ford. And as you said, too, those big states of Ohio and California have not been heard from. So it was surprises all over. And I guess it's a surprise no longer. Carter has given his acceptance speech. We've heard confirmation from all the major networks and the news agencies. And it's for sure.
Yeah, again, it's not been recognized, as we know, as of yet, by the president, who we were told went to bed over an hour ago. But UPI, the Associated Press, Reuters, as well as the big United States networks, CBS, NBC, and ABC, have all predicted Carter a winner, and that's what we have, according to all our figures. Jimmy Carter has won the presidency, defeating Gerald Ford in one of the closest elections in memory, certainly my memory. The former Georgia governor will be sworn in as the 39th president on January 20th, ending 8 years of Republican rule, which began with Richard Nixon in 1969 and ended with Gerald Ford, who took over, as we said, at a very difficult time. Richard Nixon had been the first president to resign the office, and we must say something about the man who, after 25 years in Congress, stepped in to take over what is the toughest job in the world. Carter finally nailed down the goal he had pursued for over 22 months and half a million miles when he captured Mississippi's 7 electoral votes at 2:57 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
I might add, Stu, that just as you were saying, a man who has stepped into that very, very difficult role after spending 25 years in the Congress. Both men, of course, have been noted for their decency. That hadn't really been an issue, as it very well could have been after the likes of President Nixon and Watergate and all the turmoil that we'd had in the White House. But Carter had mentioned that in his acceptance speech tonight, this morning, I should say, just a few moments ago. Praised Ford in what ways he could for the job he had done, and also praising his decency. And so it's going to be a very, perhaps, unique inauguration with people perhaps being very set on both sides, despite their preferences for either man, realizing that both men were, as I say, men of conscientious men of high morals and ethics. And it's going to be a sad occasion for many, I'm sure.
Steve, we'll be waiting a few more minutes to hear from Don Parisi in Atlanta. If not, we'll be signing off our election coverage for this evening and morning. Again, shortly after 4 o'clock this morning, Eastern Time, President-elect Jimmy Carter delivered his victory statement to cheering supporters at his headquarters in Atlanta. Surrounded on the podium by his family and members of his young campaign staff, Carter told the audience that, quote, "It's time to work together to make our nation great once again." Carter said it's not going to be easy because he doesn't have all the answers. He urged his supporters and those of Ford and the other candidates to rally behind him and give him their strength to, as he put it, put the nation back on its speech. It wasn't back on the right track, in other words. It wasn't a very long speech. It was a heartwarming speech. Not very, very emotional, as you were saying, Steve. It was in the Carter vein. He was calm. He was collected. He spoke as a man with assurance, as he has for many, many months. Both candidates made some blunders. There were things made in the debates. There were things said. Most of all, though, it was not really a dirty campaign by any means. It was a clean and an honest campaign on all counts. Governor Carter, President-elect Carter, and President Ford both really emphasizing either their leadership or their accomplishments or what they hope to do, or the leadership they hope to provide. It wasn't really a campaign of mudslinging and really calling each other names. I think both men can't help but respect the other, and now, of course, it's all over.
Stu, I think very interestingly, too, the New York Times had come out with a poll in the last 4 or 5 days or so saying that this momentum that President Ford had been enjoying in the last week or so had come not only from the eastern part of the United States, but also from the students on the university campuses. And, of course, we're in the thick of both of those survey coverages right there with the university in the eastern part of the country. Stu, as we look at this, of course, we had Gene McCarthy on campus within the past week. There have been strong campaigns, both from the Woodbridge centers and from the Carter headquarters, even here in New Brunswick. I wonder how many people are just totally surprised. I'm sure not as surprised in other parts of the country, but I think more so perhaps here in the New Jersey area, or even on campus. It'll be interesting to see what kind of responses we'll be getting even here in and around campus in the next few days. And so, that's it. President Carter, or Jimmy Carter, James Earl Carter Jr., as some people have insisted calling him on the ballot, especially in parts of the Northeast, will be our next president of the United States, having been placed over the requisite 270 electoral votes by the state of Mississippi with their 7 votes. He received 272, which placed him over the top, and it's official. Jimmy Carter, after his acceptance speech only moments ago, is our next president of the United States.
Steve, I just have word at almost 4:30 Eastern Time that Paul Marinaccio is on the line from Washington. He's been at Ford headquarters with Nancy Fox and Nancy Breslin for many, many hours now. Paul, is it true? Are you there?
Yes, Stu, and for the first time tonight, I'm able to hear you.
Paul, what is the mood? It doesn't seem as though the president, we were told that he went to bed over an hour ago, that he hasn't accepted Carter's victory yet. Is that true? What's the mood there in Washington?
Well, the press was briefed here at the Grand Ballroom of the Sheraton Park. We were briefed that the president went to bed at 3:15 this morning, and that he did go to sleep and was not sure what the result of the election was. The story goes that the president did not come to the Sheraton Park tonight. That he was under the weather, that he has an illness in his throat, that is quite understandable doing all that campaigning, just a sore throat, and that he was to go to bed. Now, the speculation going around here is that it was just a cover, that in the event that he hadn't won the election, and that's apparently how it looks, that he wouldn't have to go through the anguish, really, of coming all the way over to what would have been a victory celebration in front of all these people and giving a speech. I would imagine that in the tradition of statesmen, really, he will most probably give the address tomorrow morning early. We understand that the next announcement from Mr. Nelson will be at 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. Right now, it's all empty, including the press rooms, except for a few very distinguished-looking gentlemen from the New York Times and the Associated Press.
Paul, this is Steve here. You mentioned that it was at about 3:15 a.m. that he decided to go to bed and
yes.
Not really acknowledging that the loss was imminent or whatever. Paul, of course, our confirmation here and the first announcement was almost precisely at 3 a.m. Was that 15-minute gap the difference for Ford? Do you think that was enough time for them to realize, or was word still out, or the possibility still believed that things were not still hopeless and fruitless?
Well, Steve, I didn't get all of what you said, but it had something to do with the hour that he decided to retire for the night and how his standings were.
Right.
I would gather that the president is being kept informed. In fact, I've been watching the monitors here in the press room, and one of the networks, the correspondents, said that Mr. Nelson, during the last briefing to the White House reporters, the national people, had the flash from UPI. UPI had a flash that Carter had won, had it in his hands, and said that he hadn't given it to the president yet. And that was, of course, much later than 3:15. The White House is saying that the president went to bed at 3:15. I would tend to be skeptical about it, but it really doesn't much matter in the end. Whether it's just a face-saving measure or he's trying to give the address tomorrow with dignity, who knows? Maybe he has. Maybe he's up right now with his writers drafting it. Gerald Ford, he didn't win, but everyone, he's a hell of a person. So we'll just have to see. Tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. will be the next indication. And that's when we believe here the announcement will be made. Everyone is in a quandary, including the best of the national reporters. They have as much information as we do.
Paul, this is Stu. I really can't thank you enough for spending all night up there waiting for a word that doesn't look like it's going to come. Well, of course, we'll give the president the benefit of the doubt, realize that he could very well have a sore throat. We realize that he does, and of course, it's up to his discretion what he decides to do between now and later on today. I really thank you, Nancy Fox and Nancy Breslin, for staying up all night to report on what turned out to be a loss for President Ford. And now I just ask you to go home and get a good night's sleep, and we'll be seeing you here then later on in the week.
Yeah. Okay, Stu, so we'll be checking in with you tomorrow.
Paul, thank you very much, and good morning.
Good morning to you.
Paul Marinaccio in Washington. Well, shortly after President-elect Carter made his victory statement in Atlanta, running mate Walter Mondale addressed a victory rally in Minneapolis. Mondale said Carter will help unify this nation. He said Carter will help make the United States, quote, the compassionate and caring nation we all want it to be. And he said of Carter that we will need the help of every American. Well, we were waiting for Don Parisi to call us back from Atlanta. Apparently, we'll assume that Don is safe, but just got caught in that wave of exuberance that's going through Atlanta and that we probably won't hear from him this morning. So, Mike, I'll go to you before we end tonight's coverage.
Well, Stu, maybe Don is caught up in the victory celebration at the Carter headquarters in Atlanta, and I hope he is, because I think he deserves it after doing such a fine job. Once again, though, I think at the end, as we wrap it up in the last minute here at almost 4:35, our production team, our writers, our researchers, our monitors, our remote reporters, our network feeds, and the stringers we had, our technicians, the guys that supplied us with the food and drinks throughout the this long 9 hours, and you two guys, Dave Levine, the assistant producer, you two, I heard, were offered a network spot, and they want to talk to you when we go off the air. But you can check that out yourself. But all I can give you, and once again, is just my heartfelt thanks. It's been, out of 3 years, I think we topped the cake, and we did as well as anybody could, if not better. And we showed them we could do it, and we did it. And I'm proud of it. And I'm proud of everybody. And thank you all. Thank you all very much.
Okay, Stu, in case we're waiting on for Don Parisi. By the way, now that our producer's out of the room, we can always say that if a producer says that, that's the best word anybody can receive. You know, there are two teams of people who've been working on this Jimmy Carter campaign. One working on his campaign, actually, and the other working on his policy, should he have won the election, which he has done, and he will become president. His issues team helps him with his campaign promises and speech writing, while his policy planners try to find out ways to make all his campaign promises come true. The policy planners have been hard at work since Jimmy Carter's win in the Ohio primary last June, and they'll probably continue working in the Carter administration. The policy planners have a difficult job. They must find a way for Carter to cut taxes and trim the federal budget, while also working out a federal health insurance plan. Another problem they face is how Carter will be able to get rid of the 80% of the federal government's departments and agencies, since this was one of Carter's main campaign promises. Although this seems like a very complicated task, Jack Watson, the 37-year-old Atlanta attorney who heads Carter's policy planners, is very optimistic. He expects that the Carter team will be able to accomplish enough in 1 year to make quite a difference in the federal government. Well, that remains to be seen, and we will see that in the upcoming year, Stu.
Well, thank you, Steve, and thank you for holding out. We thought maybe that Don would call in, but it looks like we just aren't going to hear from him this morning. I must say there are still a large group of people here with us, and I can't thank them enough. You're all beautiful, and I love you all, as the president says now. Of course, tomorrow, all the information on the election, that's later on today now, will be presented on WRSU News. You can hear everything about the historic election. We'll have wrap-ups on everything for you later on in the day. Once again, we have a new president, Jimmy Carter. He won about an hour and a half ago. Just about every source in the nation agrees. Even Reuters from overseas agrees. So, well, on behalf of the entire WRSU Election Night News team, I want to thank you all for staying with us tonight. For Selection 76, I'm Stuart Narr, wishing you a good morning for WRSU News.
This is 88.7 WRSU FM, New Brunswick.